The will of the Lord shall be accomplished through him. The will of God is a very mysterious thing, I think, for many of us. We might spend time thinking about what is God's will for my life, or what does God want me to do? And maybe you're someone who has never asked that question before, or maybe you're someone who just thinks about that question obsessively. And especially in the latter case, you're looking for an answer, but you're not really sure how to find it. In either way, I think we can often put a lot of pressure on ourselves that we have to have it all figured out. When the truth is that, as we hear from the prophet Isaiah, commonly known as the suffering servant, that the Lord's will is accomplished through the Lord. And in fact, we as Christians know that the Lord has already accomplished his will through his passion, death, and resurrection, and the Lord has conquered sin and death and desires for us to be in heaven with him for all eternity. That's his plan. And I say all that because it can often take the pressure off of us. If we know that the Lord has already accomplished his plan, then our job is not to try and figure out that plan or how that plan will be accomplished, but rather, it's to cooperate with the Lord in his grace. Or, as our second reading from the letter to the Hebrews boldly proclaims, to confidently approach the throne of grace. Now, you might be thinking, Father, I don't really understand the difference. Figure it out versus cooperate with God's grace. What do you mean by that? Well, think about it like this. And I admit that this is not maybe a perfect analogy, but I think it gets the idea across. Is that imagine that you're on a football team, that you're a player on that team, maybe you play one position or you play a couple of different positions, but the coach overall has a game plan for how the team is going to play against the other team. And in your position, you follow that plan, you listen to the coach, you trust his strategy as you play your individual position. You don't go over and take the whiteboard and mark X's and O's saying, I'm going to go here, I should be here. But you listen, and you are cooperating with the plan of that coach. Now, it breaks down in some ways because as human beings, we make mistakes. We have to adjust the game plan play by play, moment by moment. But God's plan does not work like that because God created the universe with a plan. And part of that plan was that he included human freedom, which, of course, we used and we sinned. God permitted that to happen. He didn't cause it to happen. But then God used our fallenness. He used our brokenness through which his grace and mercy can draw us back to himself through his son, Jesus Christ. And sometimes we think that to be part of God's plan, he only will use the perfect parts of ourselves to accomplish that plan. You have to have everything put together to be able to take part in that plan. If we just do everything perfectly, then God's will be accomplished. Or another trap we can fall into is thinking that God's plan is in the future, that it's not happening now. And the truth is that God knows that we're human. He knows that we're fallen. And even those mistakes that we make, those sins that we commit, all of those things can be invitations for us to be able to reach out to his mercy, to be able to cooperate with his plan. Now, it doesn't mean that God causes those imperfections. It doesn't mean that he wants us to sin by any means. But every moment in our life has the attempt to be able to be part of God's plan. If we cooperate with God, if we make that choice, even if we see it in the moment or we don't see it in the moment. And sometimes that plan doesn't conform with our plan. And that's where we find our disciples in our gospel for this morning. James and John are asking Jesus for them to sit one at his right and one at his left. What they're doing is they're seeing Jesus as an earthly king and Messiah. They believe they just follow Jesus and they'll have this great honor and distinction of being able to sit at both sides of him in the kingdom of heaven. But Jesus knows what they're thinking. He knows that they don't totally understand what they're asking. So he asks them a question. which is, can they drink the cup from which he drinks and be baptized with the baptism with which he is baptized? And of course, they say, yes, they can, not, again, understanding what that means. Not understanding that that means martyrdom for them. That means suffering. That means following in the footsteps of our Lord and undergoing a similar passion that he undergoes. The others hear this and they become indignant because they're also looking at it from the exact same perspective as James and John. They don't like the fact that they ask this question. How can they earn this high honor? But Jesus again reminds all of them that leading is about serving, though, is about serving. That whoever wishes to be great among them must be their servant. And whoever wishes to be the first among them must become the slave of all. And so it completely changes their orientation, their way of thinking about how to follow our Lord, what exactly the Lord has in mind for how they will become great. And there's a couple of things that I want to pull out of this that I think can be applicable to our lives. The first is that we are all marked for suffering. Jesus undergoes the cross. The disciples are going to encounter suffering. And we also are going to face suffering in our lives. But part of God's redeeming plan is the cross and uniting ourselves to the cross. Now, we might not be martyred in the same way under persecution, but we'll all face martyrdom in our own way, through those struggles, through those difficulties that we have, through those things that we have to give up in our lives to follow the Lord. I also say that we're marked for suffering because by our baptism we receive a character or a mark, an indelible mark that is on our soul that conforms us to Christ. And we also receive another mark too when we're confirmed that also strengthens us to be able to go out on mission to be able to follow the Lord. And we continue to conform ourselves to the cross of Christ when we come to Holy Mass by participating in the cross of our Lord through his sacrifice as it's represented to us on the altar. We're able to drink of the cup of which Jesus drinks. And that is all to say that we cooperate with the Lord's plan when we suffer, when we unite ourselves to his cross, which is probably not part of our plan. If I were to ask everyone in this church about how they would think their plan for salvation should go, and if suffering would be part of that, I bet nobody would probably raise their hand. But yet, that is part of the Lord's plan for our lives. And his plan is better than our plan, because it's drawing us closer to him and leading us towards our salvation through that suffering, through that mark that we have. The second point is that our greatness lies in service to others, in conforming ourselves to Christ the servant, to fulfill his command that he tells his disciples and what he will model also at the Last Supper. And all of us, we have gifts that are given to us by God, and we have the privilege to be able to share those gifts with others, with God, and also with our neighbor. And we do that out of a response of gratitude for the gifts that God has given us. And you're thinking, wow, that sounds a little familiar. It's because that's what we call stewardship. It's that grateful response of a Christian disciple who recognizes and receives God's gifts and then shares those gifts in love of God and neighbor. And every year in our diocese and in our parish, we have our annual stewardship renewal where we prayerfully consider what gifts God has given us. And they kind of fall under five pillars or categories: prayer, service, formation, hospitality, and evangelization. And in our gathering space this morning, we have those pillars set up to remind us about that. And so for the next month or so, all of you will have a chance to be able to hear more about how those gifts can be shared. And then towards the middle of November, you'll be able to make a concrete commitment to how you will share those gifts when we fill out our stewardship forms. But for now, whether you're hearing about this for the first time or whether you've heard this many times and you might feel tempted to just tune this out, I would ask you to ask the Lord what gifts he has given you and how he wants you to share those gifts. How is the Lord asking you to cooperate with his grace? And it might not be in a way that you expect. It might not be according to your plan. You might think, well, maybe he wants, you know, might just be marking this ministry or doing this. But asking the Lord, what do you want out of this? And the Lord will often show us that. And again, it might not be what we expect, but it will be part of his greater plan for our lives to lead us towards the salvation that he's calling us to take part in that great gift. The will of the Lord shall be accomplished through him.